Jiena Malki ta' Ġus, insemmilkom u nilqakom għal program ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. U fil-program tal-lum għandna iktar kittieba nisa Ġermaniżi għalikom. Illum se jkollna program irjali. Għaliex huwa ddedikat lil żewġ nisa, waħda imperatriċi u l-oħra reġina. Li jikkontrastaw ħafna ma' xulxin. Qed nitkellmu dwar Katerina t-tieni, l-imperatriċi tal-Russja, u Reġina Eliżabetta tal-Rumanija. It-tnejn kienu Ġermaniżi u t-tnejn kienu kittieba tal-ħrejjef. Iżda waħda Katerina kienet mara dinamika ta' poter kbir, imqarba u perikoluża, però għamlet ħafna riformi. Fil-waqt li l-oħra, Eliżabetta kienet mara qaddisa li għamlet ħafna ġid f'ħajjitha. Ma nafx fi x'ħin li Katerina l-kbira tar-Russja kellha ċans tikteb il-ħrejjef għaliex kienet meqjusa bħala l-iktar mara b'saħħitha fid-dinja u kienet hi li ħarġet lir-Russja mill-medjokrità tal-Medjuevu. Mhux talli rnexxiela minn tifla ta' prinċep Ġermaniż tiż-żewġ lill-Petru l-Kbir iben Eliżabetta tar-Russja, talli meta hu ipprova jeħles minna għaliex daqqa waħda l-Prussja ma kienitx għadha ta' xkiela lih, ħelset minnu hi. Li ġara kien li n-nies u l-armata għenwa teħles minnu. U ġie assassinat u imbagħad isaret l-imperatriċi. Mhux ta' bxej ikkritikawha u għajruha. Fil-fatt għajruha għattiela u mara tad-dnub. Kemm dan żewġa Pietru t-tielet kif ukoll li qatt ma rabtu qalbhom ma' xulxin, hu kellu mar oħra lil Eliżabeth Voronzoża. Fil-waqt li kellha mill-inqas tliet irġiel oħra u jingħad illi tlieta mill-erba' titfal li kellha ma kinux ta' żewġa iżda mill-irġiel l-oħra. Din il-mara mhux biss espandiet il-frontieri tar-Russja, iżda wkoll fetħet l-imħuħ tal-ħafna billi tat ħafna importanza lill-edukazzjoni. Iżda wkoll saħħet il-moviment kulturali tal-Enlightenment. Moviment li kien qiegħed jirrivoluzzjona b'mod xjentifiku u intellettwali dak kollu li kien ġara qabel 17-il seklu. Infatti wieħed mill-esponenti ta' dan il-moviment, il-filosofu Voltaire, kien ħabib kbir tagħha, kif ukoll kien ħabib tagħha l-esponent ieħor Diderot. Tiftakru li konna semmejna is-salonier, tiftakru għal il-Madame d'Aulnoy, kien jiltaqgħu ġo salon tagħhom u kien jiqogħdu jitkellmu u minn hemm ħarġu ħafna idejat u ħafna kittieba u ħafna ħassiba. Issa minn hawn ukoll minn dan il-moviment tal-Enlightenment mis-salotti tal-aristokratiċi u l-akkademiċi ħareġ ukoll ħafna ġid. Da Voltaire kien isejħ il-Katerina l-Kbira, Semiramis of the North. U kien isejħilha hekk minħabba li kien ixebbaħha mal-fundatriċi tal-Babilonja li kienet imsemmija żbuħija tagħha kif ukoll għall-erf u l-eċċessi sesswali. Iżda sforz da kollu din il-mara kellha l-qalba l-letteratura, kienet il-patruna ta' kemm l-awtur kif ukoll artist, u hi nifisha kellha l-manija tal-kitba. U min jaf kemm kitbet itri lil Voltaire, itri ta' mħabba lil maħbubin tagħha, kitbet il-memorji tagħha, kitbet dwar il-politika, ippubblikat ġurnali satiriċi, kitbet drammi satiriċi kif ukoll dwar il-mażunerija, kif ukoll libretti tal-opera umoristiċi. Il-kitba tagħha kienet ukoll didattika. Il-kitba liha kienet tfisser ħafna, kienet terapeutika u katartika. Kif huma wara kollox il-ħrejjef u minn dawn kitbet ukoll. Senza malkom silta minn ħrafa li ddedikat lin-neputijiet tagħha u b'din il-ħrafa rida tallimhom ikunu umli ħaġa li żgur li qatt ma kienet u li kellhom jafdaw u ma jmerux lil min kien ixjaħ u iktar għaref u li kellu iktar poter minnhom. Mela qiegħ nisimgħuha, se nsemmalkom biss silta minn The Tale of the Few Ways. they say that in Siberia, there once lived a populous, industrious, and wealthy people. And once upon a time, this folk had a czar, whose royal line was of the Chinese name Tua Awu, a wise and virtuous man who loved his subjects as a father loves his children. He oppressed no one with excessive taxes and spurred them every chance he could. He disdained extravagance, pomp, and debauchery, and thus his court exuded dignity and moderation. Now this Tsar had a Tsarina, whose face was as lovely as her heart and mind were sublime. She took great pains to please her husband and to follow his example. They had lived together in love and harmony for many years, yet had no children, for it is always said that no happiness in the world is ever truly complete. The Tsarina was often ill, and her many and varied ailments worried the Tsar greatly. He summoned doctors from near and far, from his own and foreign lands, to consult long and hard about her illness. Although they were often in disagreement, they still prescribed such large amounts of herbs and other plants and compounds as medication that simply to list their names and dosages filled entire rolls of the paper of that age. The Tsarina and her ladies-in-waiting stared in horror and disgust at the vats full of medications brought for her to ingest. She complained that they tasted awful. The ladies maintained that they looked repulsive, and the Tsar doubted whether such a potion of so many different herbs and agreements would have a positive effect. He confided his worries to his courtiers. It has often been said that clever rulers always have sensible advisers, and that was the case here as well. One of the worthy men of the court, Wiseworth, by name, said to the Tsar, "My lord, why are you so distressed? If you think that the medications will do the Tsarina more harm than good, it will take only one word from you. Have them thrown away, and I will seek out a man for you who has the gift of healing, and he will make the Tsarina well. He is not here, but lives not too far away in the wilderness." Wiseworth's words cheered the Tsar's heart and filled him with the hope of seeing his wife restored to health. A messenger was sent immediately to bring the gifted man to court. The Tsar led him to the Tsarina. "Our root doctor said to the Tsar, 'My dear Tsar, forbid the Tsarina to sleep during the day, talk during the night, or eat and drink except at noon and dinner time. Order her to get up and only to lie down at night. Absolutely prohibit her from using a coverlet in a warm room. Have the Tsarina go walking, drive around, and enjoy the open air.'" The Tsar tried to convince the Tsarina to follow the root doctor's prescription, but she raised all sorts of objections and said, "I am used to living like this. How am I supposed to change my ways?" Finally, the pleading of the Tsar won out over her usual routine. She was taken out of the bed from under the warm velvet and black fox fur covers. At the beginning, she was supported under her arms, but finally she began to walk alone. Soon, she was set in a sleigh, harnessed to 6 reindeer with gilded horns and bentwood trim, covered with ermine and set with ruby buckles. The Tsarina rode around for 2 whole hours, and when she came home, she ate and slept right well. Her color improved, and she became lovely again. Her eyes sparkled as before, and from pure joy, the ladies composed a song that began with these words, "Let the joyous news be spread. Without her pills, she's left her bed." And indeed, the Tsarina not only improved, she flourished. And after a year, God gave her and the Tsar a son, a beautiful little Tsarevich, who was named Fuei, that is, Golden Sun. The Tsarevich had a good heart and was sympathetic, generous, obedient, and grateful. He honored his parents and other superiors, was courteous, friendly, and benevolent to all people instead of quarrelsome, capricious, or fearful. And every time and everywhere, he followed the good counsel of truth and common sense. He liked to speak and to hear the truth, hated all untruth, and never prevaricated, even in jest. When the Tsarevich turned 15, he grew tired of the quiet, peaceful and tedious life in his father's house and desired things he could not even name. He wanted to see the wide world and how things were in other lands and everything he had heard tell of. This kingdom and that duchy, how affairs were arranged at various courts, what customs were practiced by this or that army, which entertainments and habits prevailed here or there, where anything stranger or better or worse could be found, and what actually constituted a well-run state. When the Tsar and Tsarina heard of their son's plans, they could not easily agree to his travels. The Tsar weighed the question, but the Tsarina went to her room and began to weep, and told her ladies that she did not want to let the Tsarevich go, and that without him her life would just be a burden. In the meantime, the Tsar, accompanied by Wiseworth, entered the room and found the Tsarina in great distress and sorrow. The court ladies stood with folded hands along the walls and pondered what to do. Wiseworth stood deep in thought, and the Tsar asked, "What do you say, my lord?" Wiseworth said, "My lord Tsar, summon the Tsarevich, and tell him that because of his tender years you cannot allow him to go to distant lands until he has proven through trial that he is obedient to you." The Tsar was pleased on hearing this speech. He patted Wiseworth's left shoulder warmly and said to him, "Oh, my royal adviser, you are an honest man." The next day the Tsar went walking with the Tsarevich in the gardens. The Tsar, seeing a dead branch hanging from a tree, took it down and stuck it into the ground. He ordered his son to take a watering can and water it twice a day for an entire year, morning and evening. The Tsarevich went twice a day, morning and evening, and watered the dry twig with a watering can. His young companions found this ridiculous and told him in annoyance, "Water the dry old twig as much as you like, it will never become a tree. Your father has thought up a mean trick and is playing it on you." The Tsarevich thought long and hard and finally said, "Listen, my good friends and good lords, whoever gives an order must be the one to think it true, and our only job is to obey and to carry out the command in submissiveness without complaint and without much reflection." Din ir-rafat kompli dejjem din l-ubbidjenza għamja minnaħħa taf juwej lejn nisiru l-gżar. Pero mhux hekk biss, iżda b'ħafna disċiplina u umiltà u jitgħallem kif jinżel għal-livell ta' kulħadd u fl-aħħar il-Tsarevich kif isejħulu jiżewweġ u jgħix kontent għal dejjem. Kif tispiċċa wara kollox kull ħrafa? Għaliex l-imperatriċi kienet ħoss illi daw kellhom ikunu ir-rekwiżiti biex wieħed isir ħakkim bil-għaqal? Minnaħa l-oħra, ir-Reġina Eliżabetta tar-Rumanija ma kellix ix-xorti ikollha tfal, għaliex l-unika tarbija li kellha mietet. Din il-mara batit ħafna ukoll meta kienet żgħira, kienet toqgħod Viet nevit ġo Rhineland il-Germania u kienet principessa. Il-poetessa Marie Zuvid kienet il-buzlanna tagħha. U kienet ġejja minn familja ta' artisti, kittieba u mużiċisti. Elizabetta studjat il-pjanu u kienet il-ħabiba ta' Clara u Robert Schumann. Iżda kellha tgħaddi minn ħafna tbatija, kif semmejna speċjalment meta miet huwa żgħir wara marda twila. Imbagħad sofriet minħabba l-mewt ta' missiera u biex taqgħada fejn kienet tgħix ħakmet il-marda ta' tifoide. Fl-1869 iż-żewġet lill-Prinċep Charles ta' Hohenzollern u li mbagħad sar ir-re tar-Rumanija li dak iż-żmien kien pajjiż ġdid. Wara l-mewt tat-tarbija tagħta x-xogħol tal-karità u bditt organizza l-istituti, l-isptarijiet u koll il-gallerijiet tal-arti. Wara li talmet il-lingwa rumena, bditt ukoll titraduċi ħafna ħrejjef għal-Ġermaniż. Wara l-mewt ta' żewġa fl-1914, fost it-taħwit li ġabet magħha t-tieni gwerra dinjija, u kol saħħitha marret lura u mietet minn pneumonia fl-1916 fl-età ta' 73 sena. Isimgħu naqra kemm kellha verament it-talent tal-kitba din ir-reġina. Din hija ħrafa b'differenza. Tista' tgħid surreali. Iżda tiskanta u tistaġeb kif dejjem ikun hemm biċċa mill-ħajja ta' kull kittieb. Naħseb tant ħassitha soffokata. L-ewwel minn żewġa għaliex jingħad li kien sever. U mbagħad mid-doveri u l-obbligazzjonijiet li ħasset li kellha lejn is-sudditi tagħha. Jisima Furnika u fil-fatt hemm muntanja Rumanija b'dan l-isem. Furnika jew inkella jisima wkoll The Queen of Ants. Iva ġejja ħrafa dwar in-nemel. Imissa wieħidkom taraw kif in-nemel jissimbolizzaw l-istat ta' soffokament li kienet spiss tħoss hekk kif ħajjitha kienet saret insapportabbli. Mela qiegħ nisimgħuha. Furnika u The Queen of the Ants. There was once a beautiful maiden named Viorica. She had hair like gold, eyes like the blue sky, cheeks like carnations, and lips like cherries, and her body was as lithe as the river rushes. Everyone rejoiced on beholding this fair maiden, not so much because of her beauty as her great diligence. When she went to the spring with her pitcher on her head, she carried her distaff in her belt and spun the while. She could weave too, and embroider like a fairy. Her blouses were the finest in the whole village, wrought with black and red stitches, and with wide seams of altizza embroidery on the shoulders. She had adorned her skirt and even her Sunday stockings with flowers wrought in the same way. It seemed as though her little hands could never rest. In field and meadow, she did as much work as in the house, and all the lads turned their eyes upon the fair Viorica, who would some day be a renowned housewife. The hour came when Viorica had to admit that her mother had been right to wish for a son-in-law. It seemed as though that something had warned her mother that she was not much longer for this world. She began to fail, and all her daughter's love was powerless to hold her on earth. The fair maiden had to close her beloved mother's eyes and then sit all alone in the little house. For the first time her hands lay idle in her lap. For whom, indeed, should she work now? She had no one left. One day, as she sat upon her threshold and gazed out sadly, she saw something long and black moving across the ground towards her. Behold, it was an endless procession of ants. It reached so far into the distance that no one could have told how far the creeping host had travelled. But now it halted, forming one great circle upon Viorica, and a few of the ants stepped forth and spoke. "We know you well, Viorica, and often have we admired your industry, which we liken to our own, a thing we seldom see among humans. We know, too, that you are now alone in the world, and so we invite you to come with us and be our queen. We will build you a palace, finer and larger than the largest house you have ever seen. Only one thing must you promise, that you will never return to dwell among humankind, but stay with us your whole life long." "I will stay with you gladly," replied Viorica, "for I have nothing more to hold me here except my mother's grave, but that I must still visit, and bring flowers, wine, and cake, and pray there for her soul." "You will visit your mother's grave, but you must never speak to another person on the way, or else you will be unfaithful to us, and our revenge will be terrible." So Viorica went with the ants a long, long way, until they reached a spot that seemed most fit for building her palace. Then Viorica saw how far the ants surpassed her in skill. How could she have raised up such a building in such short time? There were galleries, one above the other, leading into spacious halls, and further yet into the innermost recesses where the pupae or infant ants dwelt. One day she sat in her room embroidering a dress, upon which she had sewn butterflies' wings. She used threads from a silkworm that the ants had brought in for her. None but her dainty fingers could have accomplished such a task, All of a sudden, there was a tumult round about her mountain. The sound of voices rang forth, and in a moment all her little kingdom was thrown into alarm, and her subjects came breathlessly crowding about their queen, crying, "They are destroying our house! Evil men are trampling it down! 2, nay, 3 galleries have fallen in, and the next is threatened. What shall we do?" "Is that all?" asked Fiorica calmly. "I will bid them stop their actions, and in a few days the galleries will be built again." She hurried through the labyrinth of galleries and appeared suddenly upon her terrace. Looking down, she beheld a splendid youth who had just dismounted from his horse and was engaged with some of his followers in turning up the anthill with sword and lance. But when she appeared, they all stopped short, and the noble youth stood shielding his dazzled eyes with his hand as he gazed upon the radiant figure in its shimmering raiment. Viorica's golden hair curled to her feet, and her eyes shone like stars. She lowered them for a moment before the young man's glance, but soon she raised them again, opened her rosy mouth, and cried in ringing tones, "Who are you that have laid such rude hands upon my kingdom?" "Forgive us, fairest lady," cried the youth, "and as surely as I am a knight and a king's son, I will henceforth be your most zealous defender. How could I guess that a fairy, no, a goddess, reigned over this kingdom?" "No, thank you," answered Viorica. "I need no other service save that of my faithful subjects, and all I ask is that no human foot step into my kingdom." With these words, she disappeared as though the mountain had swallowed her up, and those outside could not see how hosts of ants were kissing her feet and escorting her back in triumph to her chamber, where she calmly took up her work as though nothing had happened. Outside, before the mountain, the king's son stood as though in a dream, and for hours could not be prevailed upon to remount his horse. He still kept hoping that the beautiful queen would reappear. Even though it were with angry word and glance, he would at least see her once more. But he saw only ants, and yet more ants in an endless stream, busying themselves with all diligence in repairing the mischief that his youthful exuberance had occasioned. He could have crushed them underfoot in his anger and impatience, for they seemed not to understand, or perhaps not even to hear his questions, and ran quite boldly in front of him in their new-found sense of security. At last he dejectedly mounted his steed, plotting and planning how he might win the loveliest maid his eyes had ever beheld. He rode on through the forest till nightfall, to the great discontent of his retinue, who wished both anthill and maiden to go to the devil when they thought of the supper table and the bumpers of wine that had long been awaiting them. A strange disquiet had come over her. She roamed about far more than was her habit. The sound of horses' hoofs circled their mountain day and night, and for many days Viorica never showed herself. A desperate yearning for human beings, which she had never yet felt, now grew in her. She thought of her native village, of the garden, of her little house, of her mother, and of her mother's grave, which she had never again visited. After a few days, she announced to her subjects that she had decided to visit her mother's grave. She refused all escort, but one or two ants followed her, unobserved, from afar. Everything looked greatly changed to her, and she thought she must have been away a long time. She began to reckon how long it could have taken the ants to build the great mountain wherein they dwelt, and said to herself that it must have been years. Her mother's grave was no longer to be found. The spot was so overgrown with grass and weeds, and Viorica wandered about the churchyard weeping, since here too she was nothing but a stranger. Evening drew on, and still Viorica sought for the grave she could not find. Then close beside her she heard the voice of the king's son. She tried to flee, but he held her fast and spoke to her of his great love with such gentle and moving words that she stood still with bowed head, listening to him. It was so sweet to hear a human voice once more, and to hear it speak of love and friendship. Not until the night had grown quite dark did she remember that she was no forlorn orphan, but a queen forgetful of her duties, and that the ants had forbidden her to have any contact with humankind. Then she broke away and fled in haste from the king's son. But he pursued her with endearing words to the very foot of her mountain. Here she begged and implored him to leave her, but he would only consent when she promised to meet him again the following evening. When she felt that morning drew near, she lifted one of the rose petal curtains to hurry out into the open, but to her astonishment she found the doorway completely stopped up with pine needles. She tried another, then a third, until she had tried them all, in vain. They were all filled in to the very roof. Then she called aloud, and oh, the ants appeared in hosts, creeping through countless tiny invisible openings. Viorica bowed her head, and tears gushed from her eyes. She implored the ants to give her back her freedom, but the stern little creatures were silent, and all at once she found herself alone in those dark halls. Oh, how Viorica wept and wailed, and tore her beautiful hair. In the fear that her wailing might be heard outside, the ants built their hill higher and higher, till it was as high as the peak Verful Cudor, and they called their mountain Furnica, or the Ant. The king's son has long since left off riding round the mountain, but in the silence of the night one can still hear the sound of Viorica's weeping. Nittama li dik il-ħrafa oġbitkom. U il-ġimgħa d-dieħla se nlaqgħakom ma' mara Ġermaniża oħra, kittieba oħra tal-ħrejjef, ferm dinamika, qed nirreferi għal Fanny Levald, se naqralkom id-djarju tagħha, taraw kemm kienet futuristika u kemm batiet minħabba li kienet ludija u li kellha ideat moderni. Se nisimgħu silta minn ħrafa li kienet pjuttost assurda. Speċjalment għal dak iż-żmien. Nittama li l-programm tal-lum oġobkom u li terġgħu tingħaqdu miegħi għal programm ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. Jiena Margrita Juice, inselmilkom.